You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 152. Yes? 151? I don't remember. 152 of the Fanboy Garage. Guys, what is going on? I hope you guys all had a great weekend, whatever you've got going on today, whenever you're listening to this episode. But Dune was finally released. We'll have our reactions there. It continues to – it's another entry into the resurgence of the box office. There's some Star Wars news. There's some reactions to Marvel's latest and greatest and a couple more things that we'll get into.
Sure.
But let's start with the box office.
Yeah. So, I mean, the story this week was Dune, as you mentioned. It debuted at number one, $41 million, which is – I would say probably right at the high end of like estimates and early projections for this. It actually wound up beating the Sunday estimate by $1 million when the actuals came in, so it held up a little bit better. I mean, the real story for Dune here is really international, where it's at $182 million, and it's already at $223 million worldwide after its first week here, but it's not its first week, you know, worldwide. It opened a few weeks ago overseas. So, yeah, I mean, look, this is not a major franchise, right? You know, it's
a cult favorite.
It's a niche sci-fi thing, right? The book is legendary. You know, they made an attempt. David Lynch made an attempt in '84 to make a movie, which was a bomb. Right. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of, well, I know they did a miniseries, two miniseries actually on sci-fi, but this is not like an iconic, but it is continuing the trend of movies opening over $40 million in their opening weekend.
Yeah. And it did quite nicely.
It did. And when you figure that it also has the day and date release on HBO Max, right, at no additional cost.
Well,
this is
HBO Max. How many subscribers do they really have?
Yeah. This is the second weekend in a row where we've seen now movies with a day and date release on a premium service without having to pay additional money if you subscribe to the premium to the streaming service, have success in their first week at the box office. So that's a good sign overall for the box office. And not surprisingly, a lot of Dune's money came from, I think, over 50% of it came from IMAX and premium format screenings, which is not surprising, because that's probably, if you're going to go out to the theater, that would be the reason to do it, would be to see it in a format like that. I mean, they already announced that Dune Part 2 is going to be a thing, thank God.
That was, we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. But so that's already a thing. And, you know, the studio mentioned that they were going to take into consideration not just the box office, but how well it did on HBO Max when making that decision. And this is, I mean, it's fair.
I mean, it was a couple of days, really.
Yeah.
That they made that decision, right? When was that announcement?
I mean, look, to be honest with you, I think they already knew.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you would allow a movie to be titled Dune Part... Well, on screen, it's titled Dune Part 1.
Right.
If you didn't... And have it end the way it ends, if you weren't going to have...
Continue.
If you weren't going to make, at least the second part.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that was already... I mean, this movie would have had to have done legendarily bad numbers, I would think. Like, to not get the Part 2. And that's obviously not the case. So... So we don't have to worry about that. At least the story will be completed. The rest of the box office story really was, so, you know, we wondered how Halloween Kills would hold in its second week, and it didn't. It dropped 71%, which is steep even for a horror movie.
Especially around this time of the year.
I mean, it did do $14.5 million, so it's not like it's doing terribly. I mean, it's $73 million domestic and $90.5 million worldwide as we record this. So, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. I think the budget was like $20 million for this movie. So that you know, it's not like it's doing terribly. We already know that Halloween Ends is going to be a thing, so it's not like you know, anybody has to worry about that. And we don't know what it did on Peacock, you know, and if Universal is happy with that. I'm assuming it probably did fairly well, whatever that means, right? On Peacock, because it's a good movie for that type of a thing and this time of the year, and it was really marketed well on the Peacock portion of it. I thought was marketed well, so not surprising. I mean, look, the drop. I'm sure a lot of reasons. I'm sure having the day and date streaming doesn't help, right?
Because
if you didn't run out to see this on opening weekend, chances are you weren't going to go see it in the theater, right? So, but I also think that, yeah, sure, word of mouth, and also the fact that, like I said, you know, when we were talking, not last week, but I think when we were trying to figure out how much money the movie might make in its opening weekend, I mentioned that, you know, the first movie, the first movie of this trilogy, Halloween 2018, kept really overperformed. And I think a big reason for that was the nostalgia factor. 40th anniversary, Jamie Lee Curtis back once again, and everybody buying into all like, oh, it's going back to the original and all of that, which turned out to be garbage anyway. But so I think that movie overperformed. I don't think that it was realistic to expect a sequel to a sequel in a slasher franchise, which is what this unfortunately now has become, to do the types of box office that the Halloween 2018 did. I don't think that was realistic at any point. So, I think that the studio has to be happy with this, all things considered, because they had a good opening weekend, and it should hang in there.
Made their money back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it hangs in there now in its next couple of weeks, especially with Halloween being this weekend.
Right.
And, you know, not having really any major release this weekend.
But it's the first. I mean, I see the first, but it's kind of like a sort of normal time of year now.
Yeah.
So I'm anticipating lots of people coming, knocking on my door asking for candy.
Yeah, no, I get that, yeah, I'm just saying.
People aren't going to be doing what they used to do.
But those aren't, in theory, the people that would be going to see Halloween Kills.
No,
they
and
shouldn't
if you were,
be anyway.
You'd be watching it on Peacock.
Correct, or not at all if you're young enough to be going around asking for candy and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, so we'll see what happens as far as what kind of legs it has. I think the studio should be happy already with where they're at. You know, and where this movie is, and it doesn't matter anyway because you're getting the third entry, so that's like Dune. That story will be completed, and that's really what you worry about, right? When it comes to this stuff, it's like I don't think anybody's sitting there saying like, "Oh, I need this to do really well because I need the Halloween franchise to go on forever." It's like the Halloween franchise has gone on forever, and at this point, you just kind of want to see the story finish, and that's going to happen. And the same thing with Dune, like. With Dune, it's like at least you just want to see this story finish. I don't think anybody's, you know, saying, oh, my God, I need it to do really well because I need this to become like a new major franchise.
Right.
I'm sure some people are saying that, but at the very least you want your – since Halloween Kills is not a complete film, you know, with a beginning, middle, and end, you would hope that you at least get the end of the story. If you're somebody that wants to use this – like wants to watch this as a trilogy.
Right.
There are a lot of schools of thought when it comes to the Halloween franchise and how you can go about it, right? Which is nice. It's like a choose your own adventure story, right? You want to make 1, 2 and Halloween H2O a thing and ignore everything else you can. If you want to make 1, 2 and 2018 a thing and ignore, well, you can't really make one. If you want to make 1 and 2018 a thing, you can do that and ignore everything else. You could do 1, 2 and 4, right? and ignore it. Like, it's fun. The Halloween franchise is very much like a choose-your-own-adventure thing. If you want to punish yourself, I guess you could just do the Rob Zombie stuff. I don't know why anybody in their right mind would want to do that, but... So, yeah. So, that was that. And then we have Bond, right? No Time to Die.
Which I still need to see. Maybe tomorrow will be my
Yeah, day. You need to see that. And you know what? It's doing pretty well. Held up at only 50% drop this time around. It did another, like, almost $12 million in its third week. So, you know, Bond right now, No Time to Die, is at 120.3 million domestic. But, again, international, 405 million. So yeah, it's worldwide, bananas. It's $525 million worldwide. And it's, well, it's going to, at this point, because it opens in China this weekend. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's looking like, you know, this is definitely going to do over $700 million. The question is, does it get
to... You think it takes fast?
I mean, it could. I mean, the question is, does it get to 750? You know, or maybe, I don't know, 8 is realistic. Mm-hmm. But... does it get to 750? It could. I think it could. I mean, if F9 was 716.5 million,
right,
worldwide, I think that's a possibility. Mm. I think. I mean, it depends, I guess, really on what China does and how well it continues to hold up in other markets, including this one. But listen, that's a monster hit. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, so far, there's only been one movie to reach that $700 million mark worldwide. In fact, this is only the second movie to release to make $500 million worldwide behind F9. So,
that's crazy times.
In the pandemic.
Before, era. Like, billion, you know, a billion was like...
Correct. Oh, yeah.
Just made a billion. That's,
sure.
That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's like, you know, $700 million is like, feels like the impossible mission to get to. And that'll change over time.
Sure.
Eventually we'll get back to things, but...
Or maybe not. I mean, who knows?
Maybe not, I guess.
We'll see. Maybe Spider-Man.
It really comes down to the international markets, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's really going to determine this. Because like a movie like Shang-Chi, which is at like $220 million domestic... Like, it just, the international performance of that movie, because of the fact that it didn't open in China and a few other markets, like, it's, you know, the movie's sitting in, like, the 400s. Not that that's terrible, but, like, you know, that's a movie that probably could have realistically been in the 700s, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe more, because who knows, if even if the domestic total would have been higher, you know, in a normal time.
Right.
But...
yeah, I think Shang-Chi would have made that money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's just me. I thoroughly enjoyed Shang-Chi. I can't wait to see it again soon. On like Disney Plus Day, right? It's like
November 12th, I think. Yeah.
Is that it?
I believe so.
12th. Cool. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. It's been a while since I've been excited to like watch a Marvel film like again.
Yeah.
Like at home. Because I find with a lot of the Marvel films, as much as I enjoy them in the theaters, like I don't get that super excitement to like watch them again at home. I feel like I'm kind of like, maybe it's partly because they just crank out so many movies and stuff, but it's like I almost feel like I'm over it by the time like it gets to like home release, with the exceptions, of course. But this is one I actually am pumped to watch.
It's like the first time in a long time where we don't have any like Disney Plus shows for some reason. Kind of feels weird.
Well, yeah, because they cranked out WandaVision, and then we went into Falcon and Winter Soldier, and then we had Loki, and then What If. So, yeah, it's like now we're kind of, well, Hawkeye's coming.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. It's coming. So it's on the horizon.
They're starting to put the promotional blitz behind that. I've seen a lot of Hawkeye stuff lately. Well, just quick, one more. Venom held up only 45% drop, so that was another $9 million. So Venom, interestingly enough, is $182 million domestic, and to go along with $170.6 overseas, so it's at $352.6 million. I think they should be doing cartwheels over those numbers, and it's still going strong. So that's a good sign. So... It has held up fairly well, especially considering the competition and the scenario, like the situation going on in the world. You know, it went up against Bond. It went up against Halloween. It went up against Dune. All these movies did fairly well, and it still held up, you know, pretty well. So that's a good sign. It speaks to the word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I guess now we could talk a little bit about Dune. We both watched it.
Yeah, I literally just finished it moments ago.
Okay, I was going to say, I assume you watched it on HBO Max, did I.
Although, you know, should have gone to the theaters to see this one.
Mm. Interesting. You know, I can see where you would say that after watching this, but there's a part of me that's like, you know, I would not have gone to the theaters to see it.
No, and you see that,
and
yes.
I don't know that I don't even know if I would have enjoyed it as much in the theater, not because of any other reason other than the fact that I feel like just being in the comfort of my home and in the right environment gave me a lot more patience with this movie than I may have had in the theaters.
I agree with you, because I had a lot of same fits and starts with like watching it in sections, like, oh, okay, I'll bang out like 45 minutes, stop it for a minute, do something, pick it back up.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it straight through. It's not, I mean, people are saying it's 2 hours and 35 minutes. It's long, but it's not that long. I mean, it's 15 minutes longer than Shang-Chi, 10 minutes shorter than Bond. So it's not like it's this epic, like, three-hour movie. But, I mean, for the most part, I enjoyed Dune. It's not perfect by any stretch. Mm. And I feel like there were things that I absolutely loved. It's a gorgeous film.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film.
Oh, and it looks great. It sounds great. And I kind of, you know,
Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, man, you heard about that a lot, but even watching it, it was like, wow, yeah. Like this is some great looking sci-fi right here.
That's the main reason why I said about going to theaters. Yeah. Like obviously the visuals is one thing, but the sound
of it
is like really...
Yes.
Like I really, really enjoy that. Same. I mean, it's a beautiful sci-fi film. Like, yeah, I would expect nothing less from Denis Villeneuve.
Right.
In some moments, like, I feel it's like super pretentious. Like almost. I don't know what it is, but it just kind of was like, wow, you're really swinging for the fences on some of this stuff, visually, and like, I enjoy it. Like, I like that. I like, you know, I felt like, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. I think part of it was that my brain started going into like, how did they make this? Like, this entire film is CGI. Like, how is this thing, you know, a real thing? And then some of it is like, I'm like, oh, how did they do that? Oh, that looks like model work. I start like breaking it apart like that. The acting, it's all right.
It's uneven. I mean, I didn't have a problem with most of it. I thought for the most part it was fine for the type of movie that it is.
Yeah.
I was actually, so for me, the thing is, look, I don't want to sit here and say, like, there weren't parts that I found boring, because there were.
Yeah.
Right? As much as I enjoyed the movie, like, there were parts that were boring. And I think a big reason for that is because I've never read the book. I've never watched I probably watched the David Lynch movie, like, when I was younger once and never, like, made an impression on me. Never watched the mini. So I didn't. I think if you're a fan of the book and you've read it and you know where this story is going, maybe you would have more patience and more of an understanding of some of those, what I would say the boring parts.
Right.
Because like you can have this anticipation of, oh, well, this is going to set up.
Setting this up for this.
But I don't have that. So as a cold viewer, like that was a little difficult.
What parts?
Just more so.
Are we doing full on? Are we in review? I mean, like spoiler.
I mean, I guess we can be at this point, right? Because it's
sure.
It's late. It's already almost into the second week of the movie,
true.
It's been out. Okay. But I mean, more so, like just like I felt like the beginning, like, and by the beginning, I mean like the opening, like half hour, I thought was fascinating,
right?
And just like the visuals and stuff, I was like, oh my god, this is really cool. And like there were moments where like the battle, the fight scenes, I thought were great. Like the choreography was. was interesting because, like, I was detecting, like, stuff being a martial arts geek. Like, they were using, like, Balintawak and, like, all kinds of Eskrima techniques and stuff in their sword fighting. Stuff that, like, I trained in that I didn't think I'd ever see, like, in movies and stuff. Like, all kinds of, like, and that was really cool. Like, you don't usually see that.
Right.
And it was like, wow, that's really cool. And I liked the general story. But, like, as it got into, like, I'm trying to figure out where the exact part would be, but, like, probably after, after the betrayal, maybe, and then, like, you know, that whole scene with Jason Momoa is, like, fighting off, you know, so that they can escape and all that stuff, like, that was all really cool, but then, like, after that, I felt like it kind of just, I don't know, I there were just periods that, to me, were just, like, a not that interesting. And I, again, I think part of it is because not much was happening. Like, but if you read the book, you kind of know that, okay, there's more coming.
Yeah. For me, the first part of the film was like,
Oh, really? See, right. I enjoyed, I mean, the first part
like
more.
It looked great, but it was like, okay, House of whatever.
Right. A little bit of that, like the setup and stuff was like, oh,
we're going to go check out our spice fields and
yeah.
And all like all of that setup stuff was like, okay. And I was more fixated with like this idea of who is Paul?
Right.
Is he this like chosen one yes. character?
Yep.
Trying to understand how all of these different cultures are referring to him and like, oh, I know who he is and all of this stuff. And I'm just kind of like, where's all that stuff coming from? Like, they meet this guy once.
Yeah, that I do agree. There was a lot of stuff that happens. And again, I never read the book. I know it's very dense.
Right.
But like, a lot of that stuff in the beginning does seem very like, oh, here's this. And like, right. I it's crazy to say, but I actually think this movie could have benefited from another like 20 minutes.
Like, we're going to get the extended edition like they did with the Lord of the Rings.
I don't know if we are. I don't know if there is one. But I'm just saying, like, I feel like we could have spent a little bit more time, like, prior to where this movie starts.
Yeah.
Because, like, you get that.
Setting it up.
Yeah, you get that opening where they talk about the spice and all that stuff and what it is and why it's important and all that stuff. And
But then it ultimately is not important. Like, I don't know. I say now. It's not important. It
exactly.
just seems like a power struggle between, like, the Bald Clan. and these folks, but what I would have loved to have understood was like the prophecy, right? Like if there was like a
and maybe they get into that more. I would assume that they do in
but
the
at
second
that point,
part.
I mean, we kind of understand that he,
right?
He's tapping into that
yes
stuff. I'm the same way though. Kind of going back to my history of this film or not of the film, I'm sorry, that the franchise and the books, I know nothing.
Right.
And so like, you know, the natural, my brain starts going into like, is he going to start demonstrating some Neo-like abilities? You know what I'm saying? And then he starts to do that and I'm like, oh, okay. So he's the guy. And then, now I'm trying to read into subtext with like glances and looks from other actors and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to figure it all out. And I would love someone who's a listener who is like steeped in the Dune stuff to kind of like educate us a bit. Cause I'll be honest, the way it ended, I was kind of like, ugh. Cause I was like, we got to get there.
Yeah,
where he meets up with Zendaya, right?
Yes,
whatever her name is. I'm like, oh, can we just get there already?
Well, that was the funny thing too. Is I almost feel like the marketing of this movie, like I could see, and I don't know that this is the case, okay, but I could see people maybe going to this movie and coming out disappointed because like Jason Momoa and Oscar Isaac and
Josh Brolin,
yeah, like. They're
all dead.
Yeah. I mean,
it's funny. I was thinking about that too. I'm like, wow, they just killed off their A plus.
And Zendaya, like, she doesn't even really factor in until, like, practically the very end.
Yeah, I mean,
and she was a big part. That whole situation was like a big part of the marketing. So I honestly really thought that that was going to be a bigger plot line here in this movie. And that threw me a little bit. Cause like the whole time I'm like waiting for that. And then it doesn't really come. Like it does, but not, it takes a while. So
no,
like,
I mean, he meets her in the last 10 minutes of the
film. I mean, it's, so it was unusual in the way like the movie was marketed. And again, if you knew, if you read the books and you, you watched the previous versions, then you would have known, oh, well, these characters are going to, you know, not going to be around and this and whatnot. But like, if you're just going in there and you were somebody that like myself that saw the trailer and were like, wow, look at this cast. Oh my God. And then like you watch it and you're like, oh yeah, it was an unusual point also to end this movie.
Yeah.
Because I know there is no way that you could claim that this is a complete film.
No.
The way they ended it.
No, this is.
And they kind of like, they kind of were trying to protect, claim like, well, this really is a complete film. Like, even if we don't get to make part two.
Dude, this is Fellowship of the Ring.
It is in a lot of ways.
That's I mean, that like where that the was way my it ended, thought. I was like, dude, exactly the same way.
Yeah, that was my thought too. Was in the context of a, well, not necessarily a trilogy, but in the context of like movies, this is
right.
Or like a typical part one and part two, which became like a thing for a while, right? Like when they started to like extend like final movies and franchises into like a part, they did it with Harry Potter, they did it with Twilight, they did it with the Hunger Games, right? Where the final movie would be a part one and a part two. And like, so like they weren't a complete, like that's almost kind of what this reminded me of in that sense. Or like a Fellowship of the Ring where it's like, oh, okay, so this was just like the beginning.
Right.
And now there's more to this story. So like this movie... Like, you can't really watch this movie on its own.
Yeah, and there's supposed to be, like, another film after part two.
Well, so...
Called, like, Dune there, Messiah.
Well, yeah, there's
like
a number of books in this franchise, right? There's Dune, which they're breaking up into part one and part two. There's a Dune Prophet and a Dune Messiah. And then they kept going, too, later on with them. So, yeah, I think Denis Villeneuve said that he would like to, after Dune part two, he would like to make Dune Messiah and kind of make this a trilogy.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess, I don't know anything about, I mean, I could, I guess based on the title, I can kind of figure where this thing might be headed. Yeah, I don't really know much. So whatever. I mean, they're going to take me, you know, take me for the ride. I think, you know, it's interesting because we're kind of used to, you know, Star Wars is the way, and I don't want to compare this to Star Wars because it's not, obviously. And Denis Villeneuve doesn't have like really punny pulp sensibilities as a director. So his stuff is kind of serious and it's really not. I mean, this movie really is a very niche sci-fi thing. I don't really know what the appeal of this movie would be to like non-sci-fi fans.
Right.
As because there really is no pulp element. There's no like pop element to this or pulp element to this where it's like it's not funny. I mean, there are a couple of moments where Jason Momoa is kind of basically playing Jason Momoa where like, you know, he's got that too cool for the room thing going on. And that,
like,
you know,
the big brother in the leather jacket look.
Kind of that stuff's a little funny. But like for the most part, it's not really funny. They didn't really get deep into the romance aspect of it, right?
No.
And it's certainly not like a melodramatic one at that. I can't imagine that's the route that this will take. So this is really like for sci-fi fans. But like Star Wars, like the original trilogy, like the fact that they gave the first movie, A New Hope, a clear beginning, middle, and end was done because they didn't know that they were going to have more.
Right.
So I think that's, it becomes a unique trilogy in that you do have one movie in that franchise that stands on its own.
Right.
Right. And then Empire Strikes Back obviously ends
on a
cliffhanger and Return of the Jedi then closes up shop.
Sure it does.
Well, you know what I mean. But the whole point is, so like, but usually like now with like the Lord of the Rings concept, like Lord of the Rings was a trilogy that was made as a trilogy. Right. So the movies flowed, right, from one to the other. And that's why I think, like, a movie like Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, is, it may not be the best movie in that trilogy, or maybe it is, but to me, it's the most remarkable movie in that trilogy, only because it was the one movie to make that didn't have a clear starting and ending point. And for that movie to be as great as it is, is pretty amazing. But like here, they made this movie, and that's why I say, like, I have to believe that there were guarantees that there was going to be a part two, because this movie is very much made as if, you know, this was the first part of a two movie.
You can't end it the way it does,
right?
And if they were, you can't rely on the flash forwards,
right,
to serve the rest of the narrative for this character.
Yeah.
Like, that just doesn't work.
Yeah, I would think if you didn't know that you were going to get to make your part two, you probably wouldn't have named it on screen part one. And two, or even if you did, you probably would have ended it in a way that maybe was a little bit more definitive, but still left you room to go on. Right? So that if people needed to watch this as a standalone, if for some reason this thing just tanked and they decided, nah, you know, we can't give you another $165 million for this, like, you know, to make a second one, then, because then this movie now is worthless in a lot of ways without that, to me, because it doesn't end anywhere. Like, it doesn't give us anything. There's nothing satisfying about it. Like, it doesn't answer any of our questions, right? It just sets up like the meat of the story, you know, and the payoff is going to come in the next movie. So without that, I don't know. That's why I can't imagine that this movie was made, you know, without the guarantee that they would get to do their part two, because it is made very much like, and it runs very much like the first part of a bigger story. But overall, like I said, I enjoyed it. You know, I certainly didn't feel like it was a waste of my time. I'm looking forward to part two, because I am interested to see where this thing is going, you know, and where it goes and whatnot. It's also interesting to, now that I kind of have an idea of the general plot, fascinating to see how much of an influence this book had on, like, George Lucas when he was making Star Wars.
Oh, totally.
That's like, whoa, like, man, the Force and the Emperor, right? And, you know, like, it's like, damn, you know, the concept of, like, the chosen one, you know, like, the who they don't want to be, you know, that type of thing. But, like, but they're, you know, the reluctant chosen one thing. And, like, it's like, wow, there's a lot of, it's like he took those concepts and slapped it together with, like, the serials that he saw, the Flash Gordon Rogers, like, serials that he saw as a kid in the movies, and was like, yep, here's my concept.
Right. He's like, they're not making Dune anytime soon.
No, because it was deemed, like, unfilmable at one point. Yeah. You know, like a lot of movies that eventually.
I mean, look, like, Denis Villeneuve's aesthetic is gorgeous.
Yes.
Like, it's gorgeous. There was a, like, I was stuck on some of the design choices, like, in a good way. I'm like, man, that's just beautiful. That's stunning. Some of the way he frames his shots, like, stunning.
Yes,
good,
absolutely.
Stuff,
well,
know?
He's, I mean, listen, these guys are a legit filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good stuff, and, you know, lens flares and all this other stuff that's happening. Like, it's a beautiful, beautiful film. But that just doesn't get you over the line all the time.
Well, no, of course you got to have the. You know.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think people, the sci-fi fanatics are going to get, you know, they're going to love all of that stuff.
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah, it's funny because I when I finished it, I said to myself, man, that's a beautiful movie, but I'm kind of like wrestling with some stuff because, like, while it's visually stunning, there were some things I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, I get it. You know, it's funny, though, even thinking about the Star Wars thing, like, even like think about what he did with those like sandworm things. And like the Sarlacc pit.
Sarlacc.
It's like, whoa, wait.
When that thing came out of the sand, I was like, wow, it's a moving Sarlacc.
Yeah. That was crazy. But,
yeah, with all the teeth and all that stuff.
Yeah, but like, I'm with you on the sci-fi. Like for me, I've always considered myself a sci-fi fan, but I'm more of like the pulp, like action sci-fi guy. Like I'm not a huge, like hard sci-fi person. Like my type of sci-fi is Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, and things in that, you know, that vein, right? As opposed to, you know, like the like real hard sci-fi. Never like a big Close Encounters fan, you know, not a big 2001 fan. Like that's not what the type of sci-fi I like. Kind of fun adventure sci-fi. Yeah. Yes, I like my sci-fi to have some ideas, and most sci-fi does, especially Star Trek. But I prefer like kind of fun, like pulpy sci-fi, because that's what I grew up watching. So yeah, I definitely can see the moments here where it's like, okay, you know,
yeah,
it's not really like a, you know, it's not for everybody. It's not like a mainstream film. It's not. I don't see this as the type of movie that's going to be like an as great as it looks. Like I don't see this as the type of like movie that like someone watches and it's like, oh my God, like my life changed. You know, like
unless you're a filmmaker. Your budding, aspiring filmmaker.
Well, maybe. Maybe not. I don't know.
There's a lot of stuff in that was, like, new.
Right, but I mean, I'm talking, like, a you know, young people, not...
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean, sure, if you're a filmmaker, you're going to always marvel at the works of, like, masters and stuff like that and what they do. But, like, you know, I'm saying, talking, like, if this isn't... And it's not meant to be. I'm not saying that this is that type of movie, because even Villeneuve called this Star Wars for adults. You know, so he knows he wasn't making a movie for kids. He's not making this is not a fun, imaginative type of thing. You know, this is a story that he reveres, and he made it with his sensibilities, and it's very well made, very well done.
Star Wars for adults? I don't know how I feel about that comment.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation. I get it. I agree with you.
Because I don't get, you know, because while some of it, the kids aren't going to really gravitate. Like they're not going to be like, oh my God, that's my hero. I want to be that, like that dude there. I don't think it was elevated enough either. Like the concepts overall just don't feel elevated.
Right. I agree. Yeah. And I also think that when you start saying things like Star Wars for adults, it's like, well, what does that mean? Adults? like adults still like to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like adults still care.
If you want to be like bored out of your mind,
you know what I mean? Like
if you like watching, if you like the opera.
Listen, I know adults who watched Star Wars for the first time and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't grow up watching Star Wars. They actually didn't even care about science fiction and stuff like that when they were young. But because of like hype and all of that stuff, they wound up checking it out and they enjoyed it. So it's like, you know, it's not like Star Wars was like some like cartoon you watched as a kid. And now as you get older, you're like, oh, well, this really doesn't hold up like this. Because, right. I mean, that happens to me all the time. I think I told you, I don't know if I talked, I don't think we talked about this on the show. Maybe we did. But like, I remember texting you one day because I got all excited because HBO Max had uploaded like all the seasons of the Super Friends.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like, oh, loving this. And like 5 minutes into Challenger the Super Friends, which was like Challenger the Super Friends when I was a kid was like the be all and end all. Like that was the ultimate. Like it didn't get any better than waking up in the morning and throwing that on before I had to go to school. I mean, that was just like the best thing ever. And I got like 5 minutes into it and I was like, wow, this sucks. Like, this is bad. Like, why is the Riddler doing card tricks? Like, what does that have to do with anything? He's the Riddler. He's not the magician or the trickster. He's not even the Joker. Like, what is happening here? Why do they have to, why are they sitting around a table? Why is the Legion of Doom sitting around a table? And as Lex Luthor is introducing them, a spotlight shines on them. And you see them, like, what is going on here? This is the stupidest thing ever. But, like, again... Like, so me watching those episodes, it was purely out of nostalgia. But, like, as an adult, I'm sitting there saying, like, well, this sure isn't Batman the Animated Series. right? Or right. Superman, the which, you know, you can still watch as an adult and take great pleasure in because it's so well done, you know, even though they're made technically for kids. But like, so, but Dune is that, you know, Star Wars for me isn't that. Like, it's not the type of thing that like you watch when you're a kid and you like it, and then as you get older, it's like, ah, now I'm out of that. Like, I don't know a lot of people that feel like that. I'm sure there are. But I don't know a lot of people that grew up loving Star Wars and, like, as they aged, you know, got older, like, they stopped liking it. I'm not talking about the newer movie. I'm talking about the original movie, whatever Star Wars you grew up on.
Yeah, you still hold those to be.
Yeah, so that's why, like, Star Wars for adults, I don't know. To me, it's not the same thing, you know. Like, I got into Star Trek more in my late. I mean, I saw the movies in the theaters when I was young, you know, like Star Trek 2 and 3, 4 and all that. But like, I didn't become a huge Star Trek fan until I was older.
Yeah. Because, no, same, I mean, same for me with Star Wars itself. Like, I grew up with it. I watched it a lot, but I wasn't like, you know, all the toys. I didn't have, like, you know, pajamas, Star Wars pajamas or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that wasn't part of my culture as growing up like
oh,
that.
But, yeah.
That was, but eventually it, you know, as I'm in college and stuff like that, and I go to see the, you know, Phantom Menace, and I'm like, oh yes, I remember all of these.
Now
things.
Now you wear Star Wars pajamas.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Socks and whatever.
Sure.
But it's fun. But it's funny, like, Batman is my joint.
Though. Yeah. Me too.
You know, that was the shit.
From day one. But the Batman I grew up on was a very different Batman than what we get now. And it took me a while, you know, to get into, like, the Dark Knight Returns and things like that. And, you know, and whatnot, and like darker Batman, you know, because I grew up on Batman 66 reruns and the Super Friends and the, you know, the different Batman animated shows back then, New Adventures of Batman and Robin and things like that, that, you know, where it was all like corny and campy. And even the comics, not so much when I was younger, but right when I started first getting some Batman comics, like, they were still a little bit on the campier side. I mean, they had gotten a little bit darker by that point, but like, I wasn't reading comics that much as like a little kid. But yeah, I mean, I was older when so I don't know. I just, the whole idea of like, when you say this is blah, blah, blah for adults, that starts to, it's like, oh, here we go. Like, don't even bother. Like, why compare it to Star Wars in
you
that sense?
You pretentious prick.
I mean, I get it. Clearly Star Wars was influenced by this story.
Right.
But, you know, the idea that, like, something can't be fun and be for adults as well as kids and for all ages, like, and not be, like, credible is silly to me. That's the elitist, artisty crap that, like, turns me off to people. Like, used to get that a lot. Like, I'd get that a lot in music circles, right? Where people were like elite, like, oh, like, once something became popular, like, they couldn't like it anymore, or like, they would look down on, like, you know, anything that was main, quote unquote, mainstream, even if it was something that the mainstream came to, you know, like, not something that the mainstream necessarily, that, you know, like, there's music that wasn't necessarily made for the mainstream, but the mainstream found it. You know, and made it popular, and but they would look down on that too. You know, just like, it's a whole thing, that too cool for the room crap that I never understood. Like, you know, so I just don't know why people, you know, there are people that just think that you can't have things that are fun and still be credible, you know. But again, it doesn't surprise me that he would say that based on some of the comments he made, you know, about how this should only be viewed in theaters and blah, 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 and all that stuff. Like, he's an artiste. Mm-hmm. Right?
Sure is.
Great. So, but anyway, I enjoyed the movie for the most part, and I'll watch the second one. I think that's...
I'm still going to watch it.
Because
that may require you to go to the theater.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, I don't know that I'm going to run to the theater to see Dune Part 2. I might just wait for it to hit, you know, wait for that 30-day window now to elapse and so I could watch it at home. Somehow.
Yeah, it's not a franchise that you'd be like, oh, I gotta.
Can't wait for the, you're right. I'm
day
not gonna,
one.
Exactly. I'm not gonna be losing sleep,
right,
over the next Dune coming out.
Right.
All right. So, Speaking of franchises, though, the next entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is about to drop in a couple of weeks now, right? Or week and a half.
Next week.
Eternals, and early reaction is not great. I just checked right now. There are 90 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's at 63%. So, interestingly enough, you know, usually the early reviews, like we've mentioned before, tend to be the most positive, right? Those very, like, early reviews that come out usually skew more positive because I think people get caught up in the whole idea of, like, being at the premiere and all of that stuff. And then they start to kind of come back to earth a little bit over time. But this one is, I mean, like 3 or 4 days ago, it was at 73% or 77%. Now it's down to 63%.
Yikes.
So it's been slowly dropping. And again, for whatever that's worth, I just think the days of, I mean, yes, reviews do play a role in marketing, but as we've mentioned a million times, I don't think it's as important as it used to be. I think word of mouth is ultimately the, as we've seen, I mean, look at movies like Venom and Halloween, stuff like that, that have not gotten great reviews, but have done well. Right. But right. I mean, this movie, it's a little surprising because, you know, Chloe Zhao just won an Oscar for best director. And
I mean,
the cast is pretty amazing, you know, so you would think. But I, you know, I have to be honest with you. So Eternals has not been a movie that I have been excited about at any point. Mm. I have struggled with this movie. And not that these reviews are going to sway my opinion one way or another, but like, I mean, I'm still going to go see it anyway, just mainly just because for this show. But it's not a movie that I'm excited about. It's been a while since I've been, the last time I was probably this, had such little excitement for a Marvel film, maybe was Captain Marvel.
Mm.
And I was a little bit more excited for that than I am for this. Mm. And I think it's a combination of a few things for me. So prior to even these reviews coming out, my issues with this were, so this is a property that I'm not familiar with.
Right.
Okay. And the marketing for this movie has not done anything to get me excited about it. So Guardians of the Galaxy was a property that I was not excited about. Because I didn't know, I mean, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. Not that I wasn't excited about it. It was a property that I didn't know about, much about.
Mm.
Okay. But the marketing for that, the trailers and all the TV spots and everything, looked really cool, so it got me interested.
Yeah,
I was
into,
like,
pop culture.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, I can't say that I went into Guardians of the Galaxy 1 like super excited for it, but I certainly was interested in it, and then it just blew me away. Right?
Yeah.
Shang-Chi, again, not a character that I was super familiar with. I know about the character, but like, I didn't read Master of Kung Fu at any point in my life. Right? I don't know much about the character, but the movie itself, the concept of the movie, checked a lot of boxes for me, right, as a fan. I mentioned martial arts, superheroes, comic books, action, all that. So it didn't have to, the concept sold me on that. And then, you know, the trailers looked okay and the TV spots were fine, but like, it was really more about like the concept that got me excited for that. And then I watched it and I was blown away, right? It exceeded my expectations. I almost feel like the trailers and the marketing didn't even do the movie justice.
Which is fine,
absolutely. Yeah. Better than that than the other way. So now with Eternals, here's another property now that I don't know much about. In fact, I probably know less about this than I did about Shang-Chi. But I don't feel like any of the marketing has done anything to get me excited about this. The trailers have been whatever. The TV spots for me have been whatever. I see that the cast is great, but that, you're going to have to sell me on more than that these days, because there are a lot of movies that have great casts now, you know. The concept doesn't really get me going. And like, you know, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm still going to go see. So now with these early reviews coming in and not being great, it's not necessarily changing my, but it's certainly not adding to things. It's not helping me get more excited about this. Right. Like if this movie was like getting glowing reviews, then maybe I could be like, oh, you know what? This Academy Award winning director is going to be directing this Marvel film. it's supposed to be amazing. It's supposed to be something different, right, than we've ever seen before. Like, those types of things maybe could get me interested in this. But as of now, there's no hook for me other than the fact that this is a Marvel movie. And I think this will be an interesting test of, like, at this point, the Marvel brand we know is really strong. But, like, how strong is it right now? Like,
yeah.
Is this, because I got to be honest, man, I don't know, maybe you have different experiences. I don't know that a lot of people that are excited for this movie.
I mean, no one's talking to me about it, going like, yo, are you going to go see the Eternals, man? That shit looks really dope.
Right. And usually, like, by now,
I haven't heard any of that.
People who I talk to that, like, aren't part of, like, these circles, but they know I do, like, this podcast and stuff, and they know I love talking about these types of movies, they would be asking me, hey, what's going on with this Eternals movie? Like, what's that all about? Is it, should I be excited for this? Like, nothing. Yeah, it's been nobody.
The marketing is very weird. Maybe because it's so different. Maybe because it's like just another team. It looks like a team movie. You know, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it either. But I'm with you in that I'm not stoked.
No,
you know, I almost feel like there. It's the reason why I would go see it is because I'm obligated to go see it.
That
kind of feels weird. Right?
I know.
Like, I kind of need to see how it fits in everything else. It's like a puzzle piece that I know is there. And it's like, I don't really like puzzle pieces shaped like this, but I have to figure it out. It's just that's kind of how it is for me. I'll be honest, the guy that plays Icarus, I forgot the guy's name, the dude that's in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Richard Madden.
I don't like him.
Oh, really?
At all. Yeah, I don't
like,
I don't
in general or in this role.
He has a face that's punchable.
With the punchable face thing. You have you want to punch a lot of faces.
I do. Ask some of my friends. They know.
It's better than kicking 5-year-olds.
There you go. But like, he just has a smug face.
You know, he could be the next Bond, you know.
Great. He'll leave that franchise right where it
is. He pops up on like every list as like potential Bond candidates.
But anyways, you know, it bums me out to hear that it's not a film that people are in love with. I heard it's very different. The other thing too is that the whole Academy Award thing, I almost feel like, is like a black mark. Remember Gavin Hood?
Yes.
Who made Sotsi? Won the Academy Award for Sotsi,
right?
Best foreign film. Yeah, he directed a film called X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is by far one of the worst comic book films ever made.
There have been, listen, it happens. Again, I don't think this is going to be one of the worst movies ever made, but yeah, I mean, that does, just because you win an Academy Award with one movie doesn't necessarily mean everything you do from that point on is going to be like the best thing ever.
Nope. That always makes me feel a little weird.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I mentioned before the John Logan thing, who's a screenwriter, not a director, but like John Logan wrote, like he was nominated for Academy Awards for like Gladiator, The Aviator, and like something else. And then he wrote Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and granted, some of that wasn't his fault. That's a little different when it comes to like screenwriters. But yeah, I mean, there are directors that... it doesn't mean, I think, you know, you can't automatically assume that this director is just going to crank out. Like, she may not make another Oscar worthy movie ever again, or maybe maybe this will be some weird anomaly in her film career.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, I'm like I said, I'm obligated to see it. I still got to see it. Like, I still got to see it. I don't know when I'm going to go see it. I think that's what the word of mouth is doing to me. It's tempering the speed in which I go see the film. But you know, ultimately I'm going to check it out. Cause again, I just got to see how it fits in the bigger picture.
Yeah.
What it's setting up, if anything.
And if it fits into the bigger picture, at least immediately, you know?
Right.
And that's my thing is, like, I haven't seen the movie, so this is really more a conversation for after the movie, but just to kind of throw this out there as some of the things that like don't have me super excited about this. It's like, yes, I have no problem with origin stories, and I have no problem, you know, introducing us to these new characters. It's a necessity, obviously. But at this point, like, you're right. There is that element of like, how is this going to fit in the bigger picture? And, you know, Black Widow was a movie that it didn't fit going forward.
Right.
And I wasn't super excited about that movie.
No.
And Shang-Chi was a movie that may or may not fit, but at the very least, like, you assume that, okay, this is a character that will eventually probably be an Avenger or whatever, right?
So, like, yeah, you and they see did how, a great job at kind of like linking him right into it.
Yes.
You know,
with these characters, it's like even their whole story, it's like, okay, so they're these gods that have been here for hundreds of years, and but they haven't, they decided not to get involved because they can't, because they can only get involved if it's like these deviants or whatever that they're meant to fight. And it's like, okay, but we just went through the Infinity Saga, and it's like, you're not going to get any bigger than that. And it's like, they sat around and watched that on television, and it's like, the hell with these guys.
They placed bets.
Like, enough, yeah, like, really, like, I mean, look, even Captain Kirk and Captain Picard and, well, really all of them, Sisko, Janeway, the whole lot of them, they all, you know, broke the Prime Directive from time to time when they felt it was necessary.
Right.
So it's like, you're telling me, like,
I got to hear more about how that decision played a role in this, if they even knew who they were, you know, because they have their like memories wiped.
Yeah, is that what's going on?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. Again, I mean, that's the piece of the puzzle I don't know, because I'm like, yeah, how and why did you guys not jump in on any of this stuff? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't know that I'm going to, so far, and again, like I said, this is more a conversation for after the movie, but like and maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised, right? Because maybe this will be better than, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not going in with high expectations, to be honest with you. It's just like, I'm trying to figure out how are these characters going to fit into the overall MCU. It just seems weird. It seems like this story should almost be like its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know. It's just, the concept of them with, like, Spider-Man is weird to me. But I guess we'll see. We got to see how the movie plays out. But what we can talk about, obviously, is whether we're excited for it or not. And I guess neither of us are super excited for it. I mean, if this had a day and date, like, streaming option that was not $30, I would absolutely watch it at home.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't just not a movie that I'm, like I said, I'm not like super, super excited about it. And we'll see how it does. It's going to be interesting to see what is the Marvel brand at this point? And we know it's successful. I mean, I'm not trying to say that, but like, you know, is it strong enough now to take a movie like this that I don't feel like has a whole lot of hype, and I don't feel like has a hook, really, to bring audiences in, a natural one anyway, other than the cast, which seems to be the only thing they're marketing. It'll be interesting to see, like, how much this thing does, you know. I know that there have been some fairly high hopes for it. So, you know, we'll have to see. I could be very wrong, and I probably will be, but I don't see hype that tells me that this thing is going to just break the bank at the box office.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that these reviews probably aren't going to help. I mean, right now, I'm just trying to look to see what the, like, I'm looking at Box Office Pro. Their projections are usually fairly strong, fairly good. I mean, it's been a little crazy, obviously, with the pandemic. It's been tough. But, like, right now, they're projecting an opening weekend between $82 and $102 million.
Yeah, that's, I feel like that's way too high.
So I guess we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that if you're going to be on the low end of that estimate, that's more than Shang-Chi made. You know, so I guess the question is, does this thing play out more like Shang-Chi and like a Doctor Strange, you know, like those types of movies, or does it play out more like a Guardians of the Galaxy? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what...
we'll see.
We will. You know what else we'll see about? Your your buddy, Hayden Christensen, apparently going to be all over the place.
Yeah, like the Hayden Christensen Comic Con. I was tempted to go have him sign something, a bag of sand, because you know.
I'm sorry, I can't. I'm such a child. I can't hear somebody say a bag of sand without thinking of the 40-year-old virgin. When they're at the poker table and they find out he's a virgin, because he's like, you know, when you, you know, and it feels like a bag of sand, and they're like, a bag of sand. You just put that in my head. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm a child.
Yeah. So he's popping up in Ahsoka.
Yes, and Obi-Wan, obviously, which we already knew.
Yeah. Probably it's two different versions of Anakin Skywalker, because obviously I think Ahsoka takes place after the Return of the Jedi.
So yeah, it takes place in this. It's like in this Mandalorian timeline.
Yeah, he's clearly a Force Ghost because he popped up in the latest version of the original trilogy, which is no longer original anymore.
Right.
So yeah, I mean that's cool. What, to guide her?
I don't know.
Jedi.
So basically, what this means is that this is going to now. So it's like the Hayden Christensen redemption tour. So this is going to solidify him showing up as a Force ghost in the Ahsoka show. It basically now means that we have to live with Hayden Christensen's Force ghost at the end of Return of the Jedi for the rest of our lives.
Forever. Yeah. With his awesome hair.
With his. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they could...
I mean, that's how he's got to show up, right?
I would think.
He's going to have to relive...
Force ghosts don't get haircuts, right?
No, they don't. No, so, sir, they do not.
Right. They do get, apparently, facelifts and are de-aged because they become Hayden Christensen, but that's a whole different thing. Yeah. But, yeah, right, I mean, Rick, you would Shue think he's got to have that
over this.
That longy, long-haired thing happening. Yeah. So two different versions of Anakin. Which, hey, listen, that's fine. I mean, look, I don't. Hayden Christensen was terrible casting. We all get it. All right. It's awful
Let's
casting.
Rip that Band-Aid off.
Yeah. He's not good in. He's awful in Attack of the Clones. Like he's Keanu Reeves in Bram Stoker's Dracula bad in Attack of the Clones. He's a little better in Revenge of the Sith, although he doesn't have some of the dialogue that he has to work with in that is cringy.
Like, it's more of like the delivery of it.
You think?
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
You underestimate well, it's probably a my power.
It's probably a combination of the two things, to be honest, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, certainly the delivery is not great.
Pretty bad.
You know, okay, whatever. Yeah. I mean, listen, more power to them.
It's cool, man. I'm cool with it. I'm excited that they're even doing Ahsoka. It's going to be interesting for her because of the heartbreak she experiences in Clone Wars when she finds out that Anakin Skywalker is Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And so to have that come full circle, I think it's going to be interesting.
I do. And I also think that, you know, I called it the Hayden Christensen Redemption Tour. I mean, I think that there's a way for them to really, this is an opportunity for them to give us like, I don't want to say badass cause that's probably not the right term, but like to give us like at least give us a credible depiction of Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker. that we can at least look at, like, with some pride, you know?
Well, yeah, and you know, it kind of gives us the full spectrum of the character, right? Because I think – and the important part is it's connecting, you know, the live-action Anakin Skywalker with obviously a live-action version of Ahsoka, but we've never seen the two of them together.
Right.
Outside of the animated versions, right? Like, because she technically did not exist when the prequel trilogy was created,
right?
So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it.
It'd be interesting. I don't know how much I like the. I shouldn't say how much I like. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what type of Force ghost Anakin Skywalker is, considering the fact that he really wasn't very wise, you know, at the time that he becomes Darth Vader. So he's in a very different place than like Obi-Wan and Yoda. I mean, besides the age, he's in a very different place.
Difference. I mean, he's an older, younger looking Force ghost. Like that's really weird. Like he lived his entire life already, but he just looks younger.
Yeah, I mean, because he's right.
What is that? That's so weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, because
when we think about it, that way, like, okay, so he was a Jedi, then he went bad, killed a whole bunch of people, children, younglings, whatever, redeems himself, has a family. So weird.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. What effects?
Like the reflection of that.
Yeah, like what effect does his years as Darth Vader have on him? Like now, as the Anakin Force Ghost. Like that's kind of interesting to see because, you know, he lived two lives literally, right? Yeah. And at three, if you want to count this Force Ghost life. But like, I mean, you know, whereas Obi-Wan, you know, Obi-Wan was essentially Obi-Wan, right? He was the Obi-Wan that we meet in the. You know, Phantom Menace is a younger version of the Obi-Wan that we meet in A New Hope. And Yoda, I mean, Yoda's Yoda, right? He's already 9,000, you know, he's, what is he, 700 or 800?
He's older than my nutsack.
Yeah, so when we meet him for the first time, and then, so, you know, he's not that much younger, relative terms, in Phantom Menace. So Yoda is Yoda, right? And he's already old and wise and whatever. Mm. But Anakin had these two lives. You know, right. And of course, Obi-Wan and Yoda never turned to the dark side.
Right.
So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what kind of awareness does Anakin Force Ghost have of his Darth Vader years? And how does that impact? That's kind of if that's where they're going with this. I hope they are now, because now I want to see that, but... that's kind of interesting storytelling there.
Yeah, the other part of it is in the height of his Jedi-ness, that would also mean technically that Luke Skywalker is communicating with his father as a Force ghost, which makes me so bummed when I think about that. Like, imagine him sitting there being counseled by all of these Jedi Force ghosts. Yeah, well, we may never, ever see that.
Right.
That's freaking cool. Anyways.
Yeah.
Well, at least Ahsoka can.
Sure.
And, yeah. Like, one would assume then, like, if Anakin comes back, why not Hayden Christensen? Or not Hayden Christensen. Jesus.
Why not Luke Skywalker?
God, no. Ewan McGregor.
Oh, Ewan McGregor. Got it.
Oh, brain fart. Not enough coffee.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. I guess it depends on what story they're telling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so far it's just been the Mandalorian and this, like, I don't think that these, the scope of the universe is bigger in these Disney Plus shows, but the stories that they're telling are kind of isolated. Mm-hmm. So maybe like this specific story that they're telling doesn't necessarily need Obi-Wan. Although maybe he will pop up. I mean, he's getting his own show, and it's going to be Ewan McGregor. Right. So it's not crazy to think. But then again, it wouldn't make sense, though, because the Anakin Force ghost is not you. It's Alec Guinness.
Yeah, they can just deep fake his, you know.
I mean, I guess, but
deep fake it on his body.
You could. Well, speaking of, by the way, we should mention for the people who listened last week. Yeah, that and good call by you on this to catch that. You know, apparently the Loomis thing in the flashback to 78 was not deepfake. It was all done with practical makeup, which is bananas. Even more mind blowing, considering how crappy the rest of the movie is, that they were able to nail that so well.
We had a lot of fun talking a whole bunch of shit. About to film in comparison to how great that makeup was.
Yeah. I mean, that's unbelievable. That so, yeah, that's interesting. But that's
amazing.
Yeah. But, yeah, they could I guess they could do that with Ewan McGregor. But, well, we'll see. You know, one thing we forgot to talk about because it happened – it seems like it happened like 9 months ago, but was Marvel kind of moved their slate around. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness moves from March 25th to May 6th of next year, of course. Thor Love and Thunder moves from that May 6th date to July 8th. Black Panther Wakanda Forever moves from the July 8th date that Thor will now have to November 11th. The Marvels, which is the Captain Marvel sequel, will now move from that November 11th date to February 17th of 2023. And Ant-Man 3 moves from February 17th, 2023 to July 28th, 2023. So, of course, right away, everybody was like, oh, they saw the Batman trailer and they moved Doctor Strange as far the hell away from it as they possibly could.
Yeah,
I mean, it was scheduled to come out 3 weeks after the Batman. Now it's 2 months apart. That probably actually makes sense. But it is frustrating because it's like, if Doctor Strange connects to No Way Home.
Oh, we're going to have to wait.
The way that we think it may. Or maybe it doesn't. We don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm like,
working more connected to Wanda than...
Yeah, I mean, now it's like, man, there's going to be a hell of a wait between No Way Home and the next movie. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, they did announce, well, not announce, I guess you sent me something. Kevin Feige said that he doesn't see Spider-Man leaving the MCU again.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Not over all of that stress and stuff like that. I'm like, of course, because money talks, he's going to make $1 billion.
Right.
Again.
And Sony is, again, Sony is, you know, reaping the profits of that as well. It's not like Sony's like left out in the cold. I mean, they are the distributor of these movies. They are making the money on these movies. And it's helped, right? You have to assume it's helped with Venom, right? And some of their other properties. So if Sony thinks that they can create a synergy here and use the MCU Spider-Man as a springboard to help them market their Spider Universe or whatever they call it, then why wouldn't you want that?
Yeah.
So I mean, he's worth
Miles Morales. And he said Spider-Man, he didn't say Peter Parker.
Correct. I mean, there's that as well. That would be interesting. Again, that's something, you know, I've wanted forever. And it would be great if they could figure out a way to do that. I don't know that.
Epic.
I don't know that you want two Spider-Man properties simultaneously on the big screen, but hey, who knows? In this day and age, why not? I mean,
yeah,
you know, we're getting three versions of Batman next year. I mean, granted, not in their own movies necessarily, but you know, if we're to believe that Michael Keaton's going to have a big enough role, at least in the Flash movie, then, I mean, we're literally going to have at least two big screen versions of Batman playing prominent roles in movies, and then the Affleck, whatever Affleck's involvement is and whatnot in the Flash. So I guess anything is possible now. So I guess, yeah, we'll see. You know, it's funny because HBO Max is starting to crank up their DC stuff, right? I mean, they have this Val Zod movie, right? Yeah. Superman movie that they're going to be doing. And they just
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan's producing it, and they just got writers for that. They have the Batgirl thing. They have the Blue Beetle thing. So it's like, man, they're starting to crank that up. And plus, we know they have the Batman that, you know, about the Gotham police thing. And then we have, they're going to have a Catwoman thing. So it's like, man, they're really, really ramping that up. And that's good.
Can't wait to, like, live in that universe for a little bit.
Which universe? The Batman universe?
All of the DC, because
they're not the same. Yeah.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's all of, you know, kind of jumping into those different kinds of superhero takes and stuff like that. I'm so down for that.
Yeah, it's cool.
I love variety.
Yeah, and it's variety. I mean, it's diversity, right? These are different takes on some of these characters. Mm-hmm. You know, and or characters that we probably could never have dreamed of seeing, like, in their own live action thing, probably at any point. And they're characters that, you know, I mean, like a Blue Beetle movie on the big screen is a risk, but for HBO Max, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it could jumpstart some of these properties and, you know, put them on the map, I mean, then, yeah, it's a nice, like, kind of entryway to maybe getting them on the big screen at some point. Because it gives you the opportunity to take chances, right? I mean, look at how many times they've tried to get a Batgirl movie off the ground.
Right.
And now they have a way to do it, you know, without it being a huge risk, right, with the HBO Max thing. And it allows you to tell, you know, these stories that you could tell that are maybe not motion picture stories, but they're certainly interesting stories. And they're also not... I mean big screen stories. They're movies, obviously. But they're also not necessarily like TV shows either.
Right.
You know, so it gives you the chance to do, you know, and we're not in a time where these streaming movies are looked at the way we looked at like direct to video movies back in the day. Where that means they're gonna be cheap, right? And they're gonna look whatever. It's just these movies look big. Right, even though they're streaming, it's just the scope might be smaller, you know, because they're telling more of an isolated story as opposed to, you know, having this big epic thing. So that's how they can keep the budgets down, but still make them look really good. So, yeah, so man, there's a lot of stuff, man. Next year, you got all that DC stuff and, you know, with the big screen stuff, and you got a whole bunch of Marvel things, and you're going to have all the Disney Plus stuff with Star Wars and MCU stuff and HBO Max with DC stuff. It's like, damn. I mean, bring it all on. Don't get me wrong. But it's going to be tough to, I think, keep up with some of this, you know?
Yeah.
And now Sony has two dates out for June 23rd, 2023 and October 6th, 2023 for two untitled Marvel films. So, of course, speculation is the October 6th date is Venom 3.
Right.
Which would make sense. And the June date, who knows? You know, some people are saying, oh, Spider-Man 4. I don't think that's going to be the case, but someone said maybe Spider-Woman. Because they know they have like a writer for that or whatever. So I guess we'll see what that's all about. I can't imagine that. I mean, I guess they always could, but it seems like June of 2023 might be a quick turnaround for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I agree. But who knows?
Right. But then again, I mean, if Venom is going to be that October 6, 2023 day, I mean, that's a quick turnaround too. But that's a different thing. I mean, they don't have to fit that into a cinematic universe.
Yeah, and that movie was already, I mean, the second Venom has been in the can for a minute, and COVID is the thing that kind of delayed that.
Yes.
So who knows where it is?
True.
In the production. Well, not in the writing, whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think we've hit the end of our rope for this one.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so we get out of here. And, of course, go to the fanboygarage.com. check out all of our stuff there. Of course, the social medias, the Facebook, the Instagram, Twitter, at the Fanboy Garage. And you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AARonSpeaks. Thank you again so much for listening to episode 152 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week. Have a good one.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.